Well, the echoes of the Old Testament are colossal. They're almost deafening throughout this whole season of Advent. And if you look at today's reading, for example, from Genesis chapter 3, you have God saying to the serpent, "Because you've done this, you shall be banned from all the animals. I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and hers. He will strike at your head while you strike at his heel." So here in the very opening, the very dawn of the Old Testament, you have Mary's role being foretold. And of course, as you move down throughout Mary's story, the resonances are very, very strong. Mary sometimes called the new Abraham. And we know that by faith, Abraham obeyed God when he was sent out to a land which was promised to him, but he didn't know where he was going. The promised land which Abraham was moving towards was a place in time and space. It was the land of Canaan, and he received his promise from these three mysterious visitors, whom even more mysteriously he greets as one. He says, "My Lord," to them, not "my lords." And this is a foreshadowing of the Annunciation, where you have Mary in communion with the Trinity, another three in one, the Father, Son and Holy Spirit. And she, the descendant of Abraham, in faith as well as in the flesh, had to walk through darkness in which she had simply to trust the one who called her. And with her in Advent, and indeed always, we can move towards a promised land which is not fixed in space and time. It's a land not of this world. And I just mentioned there the Feast of the Annunciation, mm-hmm. but 2 days after that too, or indeed now on the fourth Sunday of Advent, the Feast of the Visitation is also recorded, and also recorded in the Gospel readings. I've always found this an incredibly moving episode. There they stand, the two cousins, undoubtedly locked in embrace, and each conscious of her own remarkable destiny. But also in the scene are these shadowy figures from the Old Testament. You have Abraham and Sarah laughingly disbelieving the good news that God brought to them, Isaac, the only son, who would be offered as a sacrifice, and the person with whom God would establish the first covenant with his people. You have Hannah, jubilant at the birth of Samuel, the prophet who will anoint the great King David, Christ's own forebear. And you've dark Malachi, the last of the Old Testament prophets, who in the depths of his desolation still can hold out the promise of the new Elijah. So they're on that threshold in that little house somewhere in the hill country of Judah. You have prophecy about to be realized. You've God's new covenant with his people about to begin. And Mary announces us with this extraordinary hymn of praise.
Which is one of the great prayers of Mary, isn't it? The Magnificat. And it's a wonderful celebration of her role.
Well, it's an extraordinary, the Magnificat, the fact that it's recited at Vespers every day at the of the church year gives some clue as to its importance. And I can think of no better way to make the Advent journey than by daily reflecting upon the Magnificat. It's a song of praise that inspires, it encourages, it challenges, it stimulates, it illuminates. But above all, it brings to life a Mary who is anything but the bland image so many of us inherited. Let me give you a quotation which to me absolutely captures the essence of this revolutionary Mary. And it comes from an unlikely perhaps source, because it comes from the German Protestant theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was murdered for his faith by the Nazis. Yes. And he wrote it in the death camp. And he says, and I quote, "The Song of Mary is the oldest Advent hymn. It is at once the most passionate, the wildest, one might even say the most revolutionary Advent hymn ever sung. This is not the gentle, tender, dreamy Mary whom we sometimes see in paintings. This is the passionate, surrendered, proud, enthusiastic Mary who speaks out here. This song has none of the sweet, nostalgic or even playful tones of some of our Christmas carols. It is instead a hard, strong, inexorable song about collapsing thrones and humbled lords of this world, about the power of God and the powerlessness of humankind. These are the tones of the women prophets of the Old Testament that now come to life in Mary's mouth." Now that's the quotation. So in the Magnificat you have Mary grasping the paradox of her littleness and her greatness. She's at one and the same time the lowly handmaid of the Lord and one whose name shall be called blessed from generation to generation. An incredible claim for a young girl, a carpenter's fiancée from the backwoods of Galilee, and yet it's fulfilled daily, 2,000 years on, in daily recitations of the Hail Mary. And you know, it's a lot easier to live with our littleness than it is with our potential greatness. I've often had a sneaking sympathy for the poor fellow with the one talent who buries it rather than risk it. But Mary, if we listen to her, she shakes us right out of any kind of laziness of that kind. Her spontaneous reaction to the sealing of the angel's message to her and of her own awe-inspiring destiny is this exultant, yes, it's. There's not a trace of fear, of ambivalence, of hesitation. The Magnificat is a ringing, confident, jubilant yes from Mary to God. She's no difficulty in reconciliating humility and greatness. She makes no attempt to minimise her own greatness. She accepts it fully, joyfully, expectantly. And if the events of the Annunciation demonstrated her faith, then the Visitation, with its great song of praise, is a glorious expression of Mary's hope.